Today on another chilling episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, what started as a normal house tour given by a friend at their new home turned into anything but normal. As two friends walked the halls of this new home, they would be shocked to hear the voice of a child giving specific instructions. The only problem, neither had any children. That story and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is, and 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. We'd absolutely love to hear them. And if you want to support the show, keep us on the air, we'll then become an extra podcast person. And when you do, we're going to thank you with a bonus episode every single week exclusively for you with some of our scariest stories on. You also get access to the full archive of those, about 400 some now. Almost like 420-ish, I don't know, somewhere around there. Get access to all those things, plus the archive of regular episodes that go far beyond Apple Podcasts or whatever. It is just thousands upon thousands upon thousands of hours of ghost stories. World's largest audio archive of ghost stories. You get that when you become an EPP. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Tony and Todd with you on today's episode of the program. What's going on?
Wanted to warn you that storms are imminent in my area. So in case I'm sitting here and all of a sudden we're talking and I'm gone, maybe the power went off or the internet. And so as I'm sitting here and kind of watching things before the podcast and the winds pick up and stuff, again, my mind goes back to those days of having to rush to the radio station to do severe weather coverage, you know?
Oh, those were the days.
I actually really enjoyed severe weather coverage.
I did too.
What sucked about it was there was only like two or three of us that would ever do it.
Yep.
And then like there was a handful of people that would never show up.
Mm-hmm. Or show up like none of us. Yeah, when it's almost done. And then,
I just made it in. Yeah, well, it's done. Go on home.
Yeah.
You know? But I always enjoyed doing it. But it was always like you were on call pretty much every weekend. And I remember a summer where like every weekend there was a good chance for severe weather. So it was kind of screwing up the entire summer.
Yeah, I remember that too. I mean, it was, and I would end up just camping out there half the time, like on a Saturday night or Friday night or something, if I knew it was coming in. And back then there wasn't like the radar on the internet. So we had this real pixelated radar screen that was like, you couldn't really get much out of it, but it was there. And then eventually I think the NOAA radar went online, and then that was like, oh, this is a good one.
Yeah, that was the best we had. I think for a while we had like the radar from like back then, the Weather Channel, which was also very pixelated and bad for the local weather and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a pretty good guesstimate. If you got good at reading those radars, though, if you could kind of tell what was going to happen, you were like down the road when the good radar came out, you were actually really good at reading that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. It was always interesting. Those are some of my fondest memories of working there was the severe weather days, because it was just fun. Everybody was like active. And, like our news director was over at the emergency government center that was where I always went to. You know, and he's like getting information as it comes in, and I don't know, just, it was fun. It really was it was kind of a rush.
Yeah. And it really tested you because you had so many things going on at once. You had all the reports coming in off the wire, and you were trying to watch the radar and kind of explain that on the air. And so it was a lot of fun. And I think it took a certain skill, just like people who do play by play on radio and TV. There's a skill to it.
Yeah.
I think doing severe weather had a skill too.
I do too. I mean, it was like playing a piano with the board. You had to know exactly where you're going really quick. And you were a hell of a lot better than I was, because I was like 15.
Yeah, but at 15 you were a firecracker.
Yeah, my God. Well, here's a fun thought for so when this airs is August 8th, I will be 40 years old.
Holy crap.
Yeah, so you knew me when I was 14, and I will be 40 as this airs.
And when we first met, like, so there's only 12 years between us.
Yeah.
And so when we met, you just seemed so much younger than I did back then. Like, you seemed like a kid and I felt like an old man already at whatever age I was.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to be on the radio, and you know, it was just, they brought me in there, and then it was okay. Then you taught me how to do stuff, and it was great. I remember the first training was, you were doing the afternoon show at the old Sunny building. Yeah. And then I had my notepad and I was trying to take notes of what to do. And then you like had me sit there and like fire a song or something. And I think I screwed it up right away.
More than likely. I thought one of the first things you did was board hopping a game with me or something, but
I did that too. Yeah. I sat in with that for a while. And
I still board op games to this day. It's different now, though, because it's cross country. They're in a different state doing a game in a location far away.
Uh-huh.
And I'm up here engineering it all technically. But
it's just crazy. That's crazy how that works. Now, interesting. Yeah, those were interesting times. But my gosh. Yeah, I was just thinking of that. 1440. That's how long.
Dang it.
855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to our first letter of the day. That's the intro. I'm just kind of scrolling out. Okay, here we go. This is a story about the time my belief in the paranormal became solidified. A story of a ghost caught on camera, much more than just an orb or a misty shadow in the darkness. It started out on a very unassuming summer's day. I was driving out to my friend's house to the outskirts of the city on his motorbike. We left the city and started winding down the dirt roads towards a housing complex of what looked like huge mansions scattered along the countryside. I'd never seen this before. I'd never seen to his house before and was very surprised when we pulled up to one of the mansions. I didn't think he could afford such an expensive house on his salesman's salary, but it made much more sense when he told me he had a wealthy roommate. We went inside and immediately I was greeted by the roommate's young son. He seemed very playful with me instantly and insisted on giving me a tour of the house. "Yeah, sure, okay," I replied. Excitedly, took me downstairs to show me his bedroom and toys. I then looked over to the room in the corner of the downstairs area and was drawn to look in it for some reason. I poked my head in and looked around to what looked like a teenager girl's room. I heard a little voice behind me say, "Don't go in my sister's room. The ghost likes to throw things at you." I was a little startled by what he said, but I just laughed it off, but suddenly it triggered my memory of what my friend had told me about some very odd happenings he experienced in his room late at night. He told me that he would wake up every night with a glass of water placed in his hand. He found this so strange, considering he never sleepwalks, nor did he remember ever going upstairs for a glass of water. This only ever started happening when I moved into that house, he told me. Both me and the little boy headed back to the main floor, and I told my friend's roommate about what his son had said. "Oh, that room," he replied. I asked what his son meant by that, and he proceeded to tell me about the night his daughter was home alone. She was just sitting on her bed playing on her phone, he told me, and suddenly had a creepy vibe come over her out of nowhere. She just lifted up her phone and took a picture of the corner of the room, and oh boy, did she ever get something terrifying come up in the picture. "Well, you've got to show me this," I replied excitedly. "I've never seen an actual picture of a ghost, only just some weird manipulation of lights." I looked at the picture and zoomed into a full-length mirror in the corner, and what I saw took my breath away. It was very definite outline of a young girl holding a doll. She had long black braids, wearing what looked like a dress from the 1800s, and very sickly white face with hollowed-out eyes. I gasped and handed the phone back to the boy's father. I stood there for a moment, knowing full well that ghosts truly do exist. Thoughts on that one? And I saw the picture.
And?
It's creepy. You want to see it?
Yeah, I do want to see
okay.
it.
Okay. I'll find it here. What are your thoughts on the story?
Well, couple of things. It's always creepy when kids say that they know something or they see a ghost or they feel something, because for whatever reason, they're just so much more in tune with that stuff. Couple of Halloween's ago, I was doing trick-or-treating and handing out candy and stuff, which is amazing because I don't like kids and I don't typically do it. But for whatever reason, one year I got talked into it, and we ended up getting some guests in the house, and some kids were rolling around and stuff. And one of them went upstairs into the upstairs of my house and came back down saying, "It's spooky up there. There's ghosts in that one room." Well, of course, I didn't sleep for the next, you know,
yeah, night or two
on that whole thing. But yeah, for whatever reason, kids just seem to always be kind of connected with that kind of stuff. The picture thing is interesting to me because with people doing so many selfies and filters and stuff on phones and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. I just wonder how many times things are captured and we miss them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of that, honestly. Yeah. I think I got, is this it? No, that's not the one. I will find it here shortly.
I have a similar situation where a friend of mine has a friend who took a picture with one of those filters where it took the picture and split it into four smaller pictures in the frame, one in blue, one in yellow, one mm-hmm. in red, one in green. And after the picture was taken, they looked at it, and behind them, they could see a face of a man. And I've seen that picture, and it's like, it definitely looks like a guy standing right there, right behind them.
Yeah.
In each of those different colored frames.
That's creepy. I saw an interesting one today, and I don't, it was probably doctored, but I don't know. Because it was weird, because it was like somebody was like filming in Disney World, and it, nothing moved out of the frame. It was just very bizarre. But all of a sudden, this man in a red shirt just seems to like walk or come out from behind this woman. But he didn't come into the frame in any way, shape, or form. It's like starting in the middle of the scene. It was weird.
Those are creepy.
Yeah.
And I've seen several of those where somebody would be walking down the street, and maybe it's kind of a busy street,
yeah,
semi-busy, and all of a sudden they just disappear.
Yeah.
Or they kind of materialize almost like you'd expect, like a ghost or
yeah,
somebody from another planet to materialize in front of you and just start walking down the street.
And that's what those this looked creepy. Like. Yeah, it was weird. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. I will find the picture.
Okay.
I'll keep looking. Hi.
Hey, Tony. My name is Diana. I am calling in from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I've been listening to your show for quite a while now, at least a few years. I absolutely love it. You do a great job. I listen to the Grave Talks as well. So love them both. I'm also a broadcaster like you, Tony. You've got a great radio voice. I am a local news anchor here in Hamilton, Ontario for our little local radio station. So always appreciate a good voice on the radio, and you just knock it out of the park, and you're very intriguing to listen to, but you already know that. Anyways, so here's my story. I'm in my late 30s now, but this was a story that brings me back to when I was about 19 or 20. I can't remember exactly when. I grew up outside of Toronto, just north of Toronto, and there's always been a road that was near my parents' house. So I was living with my parents still at the time. I was going to university. And there was a road near my parents' house. It's a two-lane highway, but there's a certain curve on the stretch that I've always, when I was living there, I always felt really creeped out by it. I can't explain it. So at nighttime, I would just, you know, really push the gas pedal to get the hell through that particular curve, because it just gave me the heebie-jeebies. Don't know why, couldn't put my finger on it, but I knew that I just did not like the feeling of being in that particular bend of the road. One night, I was driving home quite late from my then boyfriend's house. I think it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had had exams that day. It was in the summertime, about June. And I was exhausted, and I got a coffee on the way home, but I guess it didn't help too much. And I'm driving down this stretch of two-lane highway, and I guess at some point I dozed off at the wheel, if only for a couple seconds. I dozed off at the wheel. And when I opened my eyes, I jolted awake, because in my small dream or whatever it was that I was having, I saw a girl in a white dress, like a young girl, run into the road. And I woke up out of that, like completely flipped out, thinking, oh my God, I almost hit this girl. Where is this girl? Where is this girl? And I realized that I had drifted into the oncoming lane. And nobody else was on the road because it was like at 3 a.m. and it was kind of in the country. So there was no one really there. But I jerked my steering wheel back into my lane. And I looked in my rearview mirror and I couldn't see anything. And I couldn't know where this girl was. I had no idea where she was, if I even saw her. And so seconds later, coming around the bend of the road at 3 a.m. was like an 18-wheeler. And they don't come through there. They come through there on detours, maybe sometimes during the day. And so it was like seconds before this vision, or I don't know, messenger, perhaps it was a guardian angel, I'm not sure, or a ghost, but I feel like this presence obviously protected me. It woke me up. I was able to get out of the oncoming lane and, you know, was not, thank God, hit by this truck. I was panicked the whole rest of the way home, which was only actually about 5-10 minutes away from my parents' house. And, you know, my heart was racing. I had the cold sweats. I was really awake by this point. So I went into my house. Obviously, my family was asleep. I crept upstairs to my bedroom. And I went online to kind of try and figure out if anything had ever happened in that area. And so I started, you know, Googling, and I started looking at old Toronto Star Archive papers, which is the local paper, one of the local papers in Toronto. And I stayed up to like 6 a.m. just digging. And I found that in the early 1900s, that used to be a really old farm area. It still is pretty farmy out in that area. But there was a really bad crash out on that bend where a family died. And so it just clicked to me that this angel or presence or whatever she was, this girl, was there protecting me from a similar fate, I guess. And so I had an immense sense of gratitude. Obviously, you know, my eyes started to water. I started to like get really emotional, just being really thankful for that. So while it was a really scary and terrifying experience, it really, really opened my eyes to the fact that maybe we do have guardian angels that are looking out for us. So I'm open to the paranormal. I always have been. I've been a little bit sensitive to it since I was younger. It's kind of waned over the years, though. I don't know if that's just that I'm as distracted with adulting, but that's my short little story I just wanted to share with you guys. It'd be awesome if you were able to share it on the show. If not, yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. And again, I absolutely love your show, thinking of becoming an EPP. So thanks a lot, guys. Keep doing what you're doing and stay safe. Talk to you later.
There you go. That was a good one.
Hey, Tony.
Yeah, so much to say because Diana, I mean, obviously a great radio voice, too. She mm-hmm. sounds great.
Yeah.
I love the Canadian accent, too.
Yes. I heard him. Yes. Yes. Yep.
I love that kind of stuff. But, you know, and here's the thing, if whether it's your body, whether it's your brain, whether it's your psyche or whatever, trying to wake you up because it knows you've fallen asleep and shouldn't have, or if it's some sort of paranormal thing that wakes you up in that moment, it's hard to know. But then again, you know, she goes through and she does some research on it. And I always think that's really important because even with research she does, she can't 100% say it was that little girl that the story's about, but she's got more background about that area and what might have happened that night, but then just assuming that it was something paranormal. So
yeah,
great story. And I'm from somebody that, you know, has worked third shift in radio and fallen asleep behind the wheel a couple of times and woken up in that cold sweat while you're driving down the road. I completely understand what she was saying.
Have you ever fallen asleep on the air? Like, and you know, the records yeah. ran out.
Well, here's the thing. So the first station I worked at, as you know, was out in the middle of a, like a cow field yeah. or something, cornfield.
It was like totally like something out of like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Absolutely. And the station I was on 24/7, and I was on the air from 9 at night till 5 a.m, which is a gruesome
show. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Show.
Yeah, I was on all night. But we had these big tapes that we were playing the music on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to, at certain points of the night, there was an alarm clock in the studio that we used as the studio clock.
Yeah.
And I could put on a couple of tapes in a row to segue like two or three songs. And I could set it for 15 minutes and take a little snooze before I had to come back on and do a weather forecast or a, you know, 2 o'clock. One night in the middle of the night, I got on the microphone and I said, I let all the music die and I just said, hello, is anyone there? And then I started the next song.
Did you get many callers or anything in the middle of the night in the cornfield?
I usually got calls like until about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then after that, it was nothing.
Kind of fell away. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. And that I have not been in that building because the building he's talking about was, it was an active station for, I think like what, like the '50s or sixties originally when they started?
Back in the '50s, when radio was kind of big and you had the announcers smoking their cigarettes with the turntables.
This was that. This was that type of place. And it was originally like part of a house. And then that's all very, it still looked very 50s, 60s for a while. And then there's a basement and then there's like an add-on piece to the building. And then that you feel like you're going underground a little bit. And if I remember right, what the studio that you were in was in the back corner wall, right? It was a very dark room.
The one that I was in, if you walked into that side building, it was directly on the left.
It was it the blue carpet wall?
A lot of them had blue carpet on, but it was.
Okay.
And it was one of the only ones back there that had tile floors.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I have the WYUR.
The carpet from the wall?
The carpet from the wall.
That's crazy.
I cut it out. But okay, this building was dilapidated for many years. It just like literally ceilings falling in, but now it's been revived. I want to go see it and see what it looks like these days.
When you're up next time, we got to do it. I have not been there myself and I have to see.
Oh, that'd be so fun. Yeah. I'd love to go check that out. Let's go to another caller. Hi.
This is Corinne from Two Girls, One Ghost podcast. And I wanted to call in and tell you guys one of my scarier stories that I have. I grew up in New England, so very haunted, a lot of paranormal activity happening in that part of the states. But one of the scariest experiences I had happened when I was 4 years old. My family lived in New Hampshire, and I vividly remember people or ghosts, I guess, that I would refer to as the Shadow Family. So my parents, they're believers in the paranormal, and they've had ghosts come into their lives here and there. But when I would panic and tell them about the Shadow Family that I saw in our house in New Hampshire when I was just four, they would sort of dismiss it and tell me not to be frightened or whatever. So from what I can remember, my mom was home with me a lot when we were young. My dad worked and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. And the shadows never appeared when my mom was in view. So if I could see my mom, I would never ever experience it. But they would only appear when she was on the second floor of our house. So oftentimes, you know, you're little, you're playing with your toys in the living room. So I'd be doing that. My brother was an infant, so he wasn't really interacting with me at all. But I'd be in my living room and I'd be playing with my toys and I would just get this overwhelming feeling of dread and of fear. And I would look to my right, and the kitchen was dividing the living room and the hallway that led to the mud room. So like the back room that you go into from the garage. So I would look down to the mud room and I would see these, and they would move around and walk around each other in the mud room. But they always seemed to notice me and be focused on me. So even though they were this blacked out shadow, I could tell that their direction was, or their focus was in my direction. So I would just often sit there frozen in fear, trying to melt into the carpet or the couch or whatever, trying to be like, you don't see me, you don't see me. And then usually eventually I would yell for my mom, who would come downstairs, and then the shadows would disappear. I remember there being about three or four of them. So it would be multiple at one time, which Shadow Family. But yeah, it was very terrifying. And this wasn't something that just happened once or twice. Like, I remember this happening quite often when I was young. So we were only in that house for probably two-ish years before we moved to our house in Vermont. And once we moved to Vermont, nothing, well, that shadow group was not there. But yeah, no, I was terrified of these shadow people. So much so that one time my mom was busy and I had to go to the bathroom. And since the mudroom had our bathroom on the first floor, I couldn't go alone. So my mom or my dad would always have to walk me to the bathroom if I had to go. But one time my mom was busy doing something and I so badly did not want to go to the bathroom because that's where the shadows were showing up, that I stood in the kitchen and I peed myself. So that is how scary these shadow people were. And it wasn't until later, after we'd moved from our house in New Hampshire in Vermont, I was watching the like ID channel or History Channel or one of those stations, and there was a paranormal show on, and there was a woman who was discussing shadow figures and shadow people, and that was the first time that I had actually seen that it was a real thing, that there was a certain name associated with what I had seen. So my mom was home at the time, and I yelled at her to come in, and she watched the show with me. And that was the day that we both learned that my fear of the shadow family was justified. So shadow people are, as you know, demonic spirits and not something that you should be excited to see. So yeah, that was probably the worst situation I've ever experienced with paranormal. I do have a lot of ghost stories from my childhood growing up, and actually a good amount from college as well. And there are only a few instances where I felt real danger, and this was one of them. But yeah, thank you so much. My friend Sabrina and I started a podcast of our own called Two Girls, One Ghost, and we swap ghost stories with each other. So check it out if you so please.
I've heard them before. They're good. I like them.
I was just looking them up online, actually, on Twitter. So I'm going to follow them and see what they're all about.
Yeah, they've been at this for a while now, and they're doing good at it. It's cool. So what are your thoughts on the story?
You know, I don't know why it is that, again, kids are just open to stuff like that. But what pulls me into this story a lot is like New England, because I had a conversation this week about, you know, parts of our country that are older, when it became the United States of America, parts of our country that were older cities, older towns, mm-hmm. older buildings seem to have more energy, more spirits, more ghost stories. New England, places like New Orleans, all that kind of stuff. And I wonder why that is. And I wonder why we never have ghost stories from before, you know, the pilgrims came, why we don't see ghosts of Native Americans and things like that. It's very intriguing to me that for some reason it's always stories, you know, from the 1600s or 1700s or 1800s, but nothing really ever before that.
I always ask that when I interview people on the Grave Talks. I said, is there like an expiration date on ghosts? Like at some point, is it just, you know, you've moved on or something has happened? But the thing is, in other countries, they do have ghosts that seemingly go way back.
I wonder if it's because, as we are Americans now, a lot of us have heritage that doesn't necessarily align with that background of the country. Some of us do, but some of us don't. And I wonder if we're just not able to connect with that because our backgrounds are so different. Like if we go to the UK, for instance, mm-hmm. we'll be able to kind of experience energies and spirits there that align with the colonists and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, like it's, you know, and it's interesting because it kind of does make a little bit of sense. When we talk about people that are saging or performing some sort of ritual, it's not even so much, you know, the sage itself. It's the belief system. And if you right. believe in what you're doing, so I would, that does kind of make sense. If one's belief system is over here and then the colonists have theirs over here, do they intermingle? I don't know. But I could see where, you know, one believes one thing and one believes the other. So that's where maybe that kind of comes back from. I don't know. That's the only thing I can muster up out of all these questions.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. But shadow people, it doesn't necessarily mean they're always evil, but no. I wouldn't mess with them. I'd just put it that way.
I'd like to play ping pong with one. I think that'd be kind of fun. You know, just... Why not? You know, just,
well, of course you would. Hey, you'd like to probably bake cakes with ghosts.
Yeah,
stuff.
Why not? Like, hey, while you're here, you know, can you help? You know, it'd be great. All right, that's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/Real Ghost Stories. Until next time, for Todd, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.